Well, folks, welcome to this week's episode of The Boundless Show. This is Lisa Anderson, and we are now squarely in March. Great to have you here with us. Later on for our inbox, I often give a little preview of the show, you know. So for our inbox, we have a listener who has asked our Boundless team about our favorite foods. This is a very interesting inbox question because people ask about dating, people ask about addiction, people ask theological questions. So we're really excited to just share some random opinions, and we will. We're going to talk about food for that. And then for our culture segment, a few months ago, you might have heard our conversation with Pastor Lee Taylor. He actually goes to my church. Well, we're actually having his wife on because she's a licensed professional counselor and is an expert on eating disorders, body image, just kind of all of that and how it plays out. And she has some great things to say that she's going to really bring to the table today in our conversation. And so you don't want to miss that. Well, here we are for our roundtable, though, and we have got some great friends here. We have Josh and Bree, some return guests. Hey, guys.
Hello.
Hey,
hello.
Good to have you. And Lauren, brand new to the roundtable. Lauren, great to have you.
Hi, thank you.
So this is going to be fun because we're going to talk about dating, and we're specifically going to talk about when you're evaluating a potential date, or maybe you are actually in your dating relationship already, how we talk a lot here at Boundless about trajectory and about a person's potential. And I'm known for saying, because women have literally said to me that they want to marry John Piper. And I say, you know what? John Piper was not John Piper when he was 23. He was probably some jerk idiot who needed marriage and needed sanctification and needed maturity and all kinds of things to become who he is. And so he had potential, though, and he was malleable, he was teachable, he was humble, and he grew. And probably his wife helped him in that process. Mm-hmm. That said, you can kind of see potential in a person, or sometimes you can just be like wishful thinking and just hoping they're going to become someone that maybe they're not, and we need to figure out how do you tell the difference. So that's why you three, I'm so grateful you're here, because I'm just counting on you to be experts in this and give us all the deets.
Expert in seeing other people's flaws.
Yeah. No, that's my job. I love that. No, so anyway, so let's go ahead and jump into the conversation really by saying, like, just general thoughts on that topic. Like, I'm sure, I don't know of a person that goes into a dating relationship saying, well, you know, I want to give this person a chance, but I'm sure they're not that great. Or I'm sure everyone's hopeful, you know, because they're into someone, that this is going to work out. But where, have you guys seen in your own stories of where kind of the rubber hits the road and you're like, oh, this actually is a real person, not just a figment of my imagination that I built up. So I actually have to grapple with this. How have you felt about that? Two of you are married, and so you can speak from the other side of the matrimonial aisle. So we're hoping you'll weigh in on that. And then Lauren and I, as, you know, daters who have walked through the good, the bad, and the ugly, you know, we'll weigh in with our perspectives too. But who wants to start?
Yeah, I mean, I'll jump in. I think, you know, I help lead our young adult ministry at our church, and I have seen some gals kind of have a standard policy almost of if a guy asks them out, unless there's a glaring red flag, even if there's no like interest, excitement, I'll give him a date or three. I've seen up to three be the number. Yeah. And it's, to me, fascinating. Girls were clearly not giving me that benefit of the doubt when I was in college, but it's interesting to see it. And I think having a willingness to get to know somebody, I think is a good trait, because you don't know what you don't know until you spend some time with a person. And so even one meal, one coffee, like I think a phrase I've coined is, and I've said even on air before, is a coffee is not a 10-year plan. So you kind of learn through time together what you see in a person potentially, you know?
Mm-hmm. That's interesting, because I would say I've been the give chances kind of person. And I think in part because it's like I interviewed Henry Cloud for this show where he talked about the horrible first date that he and his wife had. And they just decided on a lark and almost on a dare to go out the second time, and it went so much better. So I'm always like, the law of averages, y'all. Let's like maybe just give it a chance. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a big difference between what are some glaring red flags and what are some things that you see in a person that just can be chalked up to personal growth. Because, I mean, we all need to grow. We are all sinners, and we all make mistakes, and we all, like John Piper, you know, like Lisa was mentioning earlier.
Or fill in your theologian or influencer, whoever.
Fill in the people that you like. We all have room to grow. And I think that there's a big difference between, like, okay, this is a huge character trait that they really aren't going to change. Like, this is who they are. And if I don't like that, then I shouldn't pursue them. And then there's a difference between, like, okay, this is just a growth opportunity. I mean, like, for example, if their communication is not great, that is something that they can work on, and that's not a red flag. That's not a reason to dump them.
Yeah, that's good. Lauren, how about you? Have you seen, as you've dated, have you seen any things crop up where you've had to make the decision, like, is this something that's a non-negotiable, or is this something where I could see this person grow?
Oh, definitely. Even, like, in the aspect of young adults groups, there's always that underlying notion of, like, we're going to find somebody. You have to find somebody because I'm in this young adults group. And like, picking and choosing people, I mean, you're not, there's never always going to be, like, one soulmate. And so, like, you pick somebody and, of course, you're working with them to see, like, their faults and then what isn't, what you can see as their growth. And I think the big, are they going to be able to grow in these aspects that aren't, that you would see as, like, red flags, so to say, with God? Is God going to help them change, or is it going to be more like that's something that they have to decide to change themselves because you can't fix them in your way? So,
yeah, I think that's tricky because it's oftentimes we try to step in and we try to be the savior in a situation, or we try to be the Holy Spirit, or we try to be, you know, like, I know that I've definitely done that. I remember dating a guy for a while who I was just concerned that he didn't really have community. He went to church every week, but he kind of populated a back row and then he just did his own thing. And it was almost like a kind of a rote ritual for him. So, of course, I'm very helpfully saying, well, have you ever considered a small group? And I remember he said something like, well, you know, I don't know, is it important to you? I mean, I guess I could do it, you know, if you want me to. And I was like, wow, okay, maybe this is a little bit of a window into the situation that has to, you know, we have to bring something to bear here. I will say, to illustrate Bree's example, I'll tell on myself on the flip side of that. I had a guy I was dating, and I think I mentioned this a long time ago on the show at some point, who the relationship was a disaster on many levels, and it ended toxically and implosively, which was probably a good thing, I guess. It was very clear. But during the course of our relationship, he called me out on an overuse of sarcasm to the point where, and of course he had to say it in the terms of, like, you know, a lot of people think this. He's like collectively speaking for everyone else, which was very irritating to me. But what he said was spot on. And it was, I went to sarcasm too often, too quickly, and I could say things that were said in a very cutting way. And I didn't balance it out appropriately with encouragement of people. And I remember going home and thinking to myself, that guy is such a jerk. And he was really right about that. And it was like the Holy Spirit speaking to me through him, maybe not even with his best intentions, of something that I needed to grow in and change. And so I took that up and turned the script on that. And I think that was a big, I mean, I just felt like that was a blessing to get that on the flip side of that. What, to that point, you know, hopefully we're all going to be teachable in certain areas. But are there any things that you would say that you've seen or that you know to look out for that you would say, absolutely, this is a pause. This isn't, you can't just instruct someone out of this. Like, this is not, you're not going to be able to single-handedly in a relationship shape this. What are some of the biggest concerns that you've seen?
I think it comes down to, at least like in my experiences, if they say they're going to change or make a change in their life, and then you see no fruit of that, like they aren't actually pursuing it, it doesn't even matter what it is. I mean, it could, I'm not going to go so far to even say that, like, oh, they're not fulfilling their New Year's resolution, because nobody does that. But if they're saying,
except
like,
for me, Bri, but let's not get into that. Okay.
Well, you are favored and highly blessed, Lisa. But like in the example of the small group that you gave, like if he said like, oh, that's a great idea, I should pursue that, and then doesn't, or even if you like bring it up in conversation a couple of times and they're like, oh yeah, I'll get to it eventually, that just shows me no follow through. And that's a big red flag, at least for me.
Mm-hmm. Kind of branching off of that. Their relationship with God is going to reflect on their relationship with you. So if one of the like dates that you want to do to grow your relationship between them and God is like doing a Bible study with them and growing in the Word, and you suggest it, and then they're like, oh yeah, we'll get to it eventually, and they never like follow through, that's going to show their connection with God, and then what their relationship with you is going to look like as well. And then I've also seen like people come to like church and to groups and just to hang out with other people, and they don't intentionally go to grow their relationship with God. Mm. It's more so like, oh, I'm lonely. I want to spend time with people, so this is my only option. And I think that is one of the bigger red flags, is like if they have no follow through on wanting to grow in connection with God, then they're not going to have a follow through on wanting to spend a life with you, mm-hmm. type thing.
Yeah, I mean, I could go on this topic, this particular question. But first off, I mean, I think in context, the best way to date is in community, right? Mm-hmm. You have friends who are in the church community who can speak in, see things, hear things, know things about you and the person you're dating over a period of time, and have the best perspective, so that it's not all you in your own head trying to decide, is this the right person? Is this not the right person? Mm-hmm. But with that as a basis, as a foundational thought, I think when I see guys come into our young adult group and their goal isn't to immediately follow Christ, it's follow the pretty girls around the room from week to week, you can start to see like what are they known for? What are they known for? They're known for asking a lot of girls out, going on lots of dates with, you know, and it's like that is like almost becoming their overarching goal in life. Not to say that seeking a spouse is a bad thing in any sense, but you start to see them work a room over time. On the flip side, I see guys who will come in and they watch. They watch the young ladies in the group. They try to see what kind of character is displayed over time, who has a servant's heart, you know, and it's interesting. I'll end up having conversations with some of those guys and I'm like, hey, you know, there's some great gals here. Why haven't you asked one out? And it's because they want to know well if it's somebody worthy to pursue. Do they display the character of Christ? So you kind of see different MOs of different people. Mm-hmm. No particular person immediately, I think, deserves a red flag just for walking in a room and seeking out a date early on and whatnot. But I think it's important to date in community, date over time, mm-hmm. see, let the girlfriends and your guy friends speak in and say, this is what we know. And then if you see a pattern of somebody who's just constantly breaking up and breaking hearts and not good communication and not healthy conflict and all that kind of stuff, you start to see that with one or two or three girls and you're like, yeah, that's kind of a pattern problem.
Yeah. And another pattern I see of, I guess I would just call it immaturity, is that person who is only speaking to or showing kindness to the people they're interested in romantically.
That's good. Yeah.
I mean, a great sign of character is the person who is interested in other people, who is seeking the good of other people, who wants to see everyone in their friend group grow spiritually, who is showing self-sacrifice and service and character to mm-hmm. people of all different generations, all, you know, this sounds so junior high, but the popular kids and the non-popular kids. Mm-hmm. I mean, that just shows maturity, yeah, and biblical, you know, alignment with the character of Christ. And so I think that's good. I was going to circle back too and say two things, you know, just generally based on what we've been saying. Any, like, I find a red flag to be if I'm the one that's constantly trying to force spiritual conversations, and it's like, let's talk about our faith, let's talk about the sermon, let's talk about your background and your, you know, your faith background or whatever. Let's talk about, you know, let's pray about this. I mean, that's, you know, some is personality. Not everyone's going to be like super forceful in that or whatever, but you can tell after a while if it's kind of getting like, this person has no interest in spiritual things. I mean, you got to be able to tell the difference of that. Another great clue, and I'm getting this off of a conversation I had a little while back with someone, is she was broken up with because the guy basically called out in her a few things from her past that she had not addressed or that she hadn't brought to the light and really dealt with. And she was just so, speaking of being humble and teachable, I felt like it was just really classy of her to own that and to say, that is absolutely something I need to work on. And I want to go after that because it will help me in future dating relationships, and better now to hear this and to have that go on, you know, than to be in marriage and be, you know, with someone who's like, well, no, hard pass on this now. And I don't even want to be with you. And so I just thought that was another great example of that. So to that point, I mean, I guess, you know, kudos for this person for speaking out. To that point, sometimes we do in relationships, and by sometimes, I mean pretty much all the time. I mean, eventually, if you're going to date and marry a person, you're going to have to say some hard things occasionally. You're going to have to bring up stuff because sometimes you just need to know. You need to know, how's this person going to respond to something that you're bringing up? Even if you're saying something and you bring it up humbly and you want to be, you know, correctable in the sense of maybe it is off base, but how does that person respond? Are there examples of conversations or situations you've been in where you've kind of had to go after that? I mean, even in marriage, you have to do that, have hard conversations about stuff. So how do you do that?
Well, I think first and foremost, you should never start a conversation with, we need to talk. Never in person, never over text, never start that way. That is not the way to handle conflict well. But also, like, don't be accusatory, and definitely just own whatever your side of the conflict is, because any conflict has two sides to it, minimum, if not more people. And so definitely own your side. But I think with regards to at least the way that my husband and I handle conflict, or have learned to handle conflict recently in the last couple years of our marriage, is definitely not coming at it with, like, one of my issues is passive aggression. Like, I'm like, well, you did this, or I don't even know how to, you know, it comes out of me. I don't know how to give you an example of passive aggression. But what we've started doing is like, hey, I have felt this way, or this was happening and this is how I felt. Can we talk about this? And that's how we kind of tend to our conflict. And I just would say that, like, if somebody immediately turns away, or maybe you need to actually have a conversation about conflict. I think that's an important thing for a dating relationship and a marital relationship, because, like, for me, in anger, I genuinely need about 5-10 minutes to go and calm down and then come back to have the conversation, because if not, my tongue will be a sword and I am not kind unless I have that time to calm down. And so since I have established that with my husband, we set that precedent. I go away, I come back, and we have a calm conversation. But that's because I know how I handle conflict and I've communicated that. And so I think that in a dating relationship, if they haven't expressed how they handle conflict, maybe bring that up, and then you'll be able to handle it a little bit better and meet each other where you are.
So, okay, I had an intern stay with us in a previous summer, and we've regularly housing interns. And that young lady kind of got to a point where she was like, ah, good guy, really good guy, but I feel like maybe he's not as committed to his local church, and it doesn't seem like he really seeks out church community, and there were some things there. And as we're talking, you know, one of the things I said was, I really think you should talk to him about it. Mm-hmm. And she immediately went up and in her mind was like, no, I don't know. Is that really my place? And and I think, honestly, that as you said, Lisa, like, marriage is so much of that. It is so much, and it doesn't have to be, you know, a fiery moment. It can be. Sometimes it does get to that, but it can be so much of just like, hey, you know, I've been noticing this pattern over time, and I'm just curious, like, you know, this is what I see, observation. Tell me what your heart is behind that. And if you don't get into a pattern of that in dating, it's gonna come in marriage. It will happen. Mm-hmm. Because one of you if it's not happening, if you're not having some degree of healthy conflict in marriage, somebody's avoiding or both. Mm-hmm. And you have to find ways to work through concerns, question marks, even legitimate offenses. Sometimes even in marriage, like the preference things, I really prefer that you maybe don't just rinse out your dish and leave it in the sink, you know, maybe actually rinse it and put it where it belongs, you know, like, yep. So, you know, that's never happened to me.
Hypothetical.
Yeah. Hypothetical, yeah. Of course, for a friend. Yeah. But I say all that to say, like, I actually think for some of the folks listening, they need to know you're in their life. God has sovereignly placed you in the life of the person you're dating. And it's good for them as a brother or sister in the Lord to have an honest conversation about concerns, question marks, whatever. And even if you've only been dating for a few months, like, that's a pattern you want to establish, a healthy pattern that would go into marriage with you.
Yeah, which I think is a great point, because I've heard this said by many marriage experts and whatever. When you are dating, like, this person is generally at their best. Like, they are, and this is why, you know, do they have other people in their life who can give you an objective assessment of how they're showing up in regular conversations where they're not showered and dressed nicely and saying all the right things? Mm-hmm. Because, again, you know, when the rubber hits the road and conflict comes and people decide, you know, really, when it comes down to it, I don't care about church, or I don't care about the Bible, or I don't believe the Bible is entirely true. I mean, that kind of thing, those kind of conversations, you want to find out about a lot earlier on than a lot of people are led to believe. And it's very frustrating, because I've been in situations with friendships before where I have literally heard out of girls' mouths, well, what if this is my last chance? Mm. What if this is the only guy who will date me? And I'm like, okay, that's when you have to turn it around. It becomes a discipleship issue, because now it's a trusting God issue. Mm-hmm. Now we have to take that up with the Lord, because this is not a, you know, well, let's just take the best opportunity. It's not like a risk versus reward kind of situation, like you're playing the stock market. I mean, you actually have a God who, hey, he cares, you know, and he can actually do something about your situation. So I think that is just something to keep in mind as well.
I agree wholeheartedly. No, I've seen in my life as well, it's like that idea of, if I don't end up with this guy, nobody's going to want me. Mm-hmm. And this is my last chance. And I think that also plays into the idea of, oh, you have to sit and talk to him, except for the fact that I don't want to hurt his feelings, because if I hurt his feelings and we have a fight and then we break up, I'm not going to find anybody else to love. And that's just so toxic. Mm-hmm. Because you're not, him not conversing with you, you not conversing with him, it's hard to get to know each other, like, on an intimate level, when you decide not to have the hard conversations because you don't want to hurt their feelings, so to speak. Marriage and dating and marriage and life together is hurt feelings, as well as, like, the love and the happiness, but there's pain there too.
You're setting up patterns of a shallow marriage. Yes. By having shallow dating.
Exactly.
That's well, good.
Yeah. So really good thoughts, you guys. I mean, we always, like, can say so much more and we run out of time. So that said, I like to give a shout out to people. When Bree puts this up on social, weigh in and tell us what, you know, a lot of you probably have been in this situation of, like, we had been, you know, I invested so much time, but I saw it was going south. So I decided to just hang on and ride it out. Well, then 5 years went by. And those are sad stories that we don't want for you. We don't want you to get stuck in a go nowhere relationship that can't have a fruitful future. And we want you to be able to go after that in a much more healthy way. So thank you guys, for weighing in. Awesome. Yeah.
Not just a thing up in the sky, a sweet by and by. No, no. Not just a set of pearly gaze of angels with wings. No, it's more. Yeah.
folks, here we are for this week's culture segment. And I often say when I lead into the segment that we have the privilege of introducing you to new friends here at Boundless. And for our culture segment, they are friends, but they're also often experts. And so this week we actually have both and. We have a friend of mine from church, Becky Taylor, Dr. Becky Taylor. And so her professional realm is in the world of counseling. She's an assistant professor at Colorado Christian University. She's also a speaker. She is a pastor's wife, and she's a certified eating disorder specialist, which brings us to our topic today. We're going to talk about body image, eating disorders, everything that plays into that whole sphere. And so, Becky, welcome to the Boundless Show.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Well, this is really fun for us and a privilege for me. And so we want to dive into this because we're talking to young adults primarily from really all over the world who I think there's just a lot of like, oh, yeah, you know, if you throw out the term eating disorders, most people kind of latch onto something and think of what that is. And then you say body image and people are just like, oh, yeah, I don't look good in this outfit. So they make right. some kind of assumption of what that is. But I want to actually start with your own story with this because you're all professional and all, but you actually have personal experience with this and probably why it became a passion for you. So tell us a little bit of your background.
Yes. So I am Becky Taylor. My previous name was Hickson. Previous last name was Hickson. Grew up in Colorado Springs. Came from a father who's a pastor, Christian family. And one of the aspects of my story that relates to this topic is that I developed fairly early, meaning, you know, started developing my breasts and started my cycle early and things like that. And so had a lot of insecurity of just not really fitting in. And then entering into middle school and continuing to feel that feeling of when you develop early and you're a lot larger than the, you know, prepubescent peer friends that you have, I almost felt like monstrous, you know, and I didn't have the cognitive abilities to be able to reason like, that's not true, you know, until later on in high school. I remember I think it was like junior or senior year, I think I started to average out and people, quote unquote, maybe started to notice me. But at that time, I had already developed all of the negative thoughts and beliefs that, you know, I had about myself that were ingrained in how I viewed myself. And so that kind of carried into college.
Yeah. Okay. And so it's fascinating you say that because I know one of the things you talk about, and we're going to get into this in a little bit, is, you know, if you sat down in a park and looked at really small children, the perception of or the lack of awareness about this is pretty palpable unless they've had conversations or they've been watching TV or films or different things influence it. But that sense of freedom and that sense of a lack of awareness of this, but at some point that changes. And all of a sudden you're in conversations or kids are looking at other kids and you're aware of yourself and all that and that kind of stuff. And it's almost like, man, if we could get back to that, you know, and that.
Oh, just that, like you're like holding a kite or a balloon and you see a random stranger on the playground. You're like, let's play.
Yeah.
And yeah, there's not, you know, for some people that age, most people that are younger, there's not a care in the world other than like, hey, let's play and connect and be friends and enjoy life.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, I think for me, it was like, I was still young. I think it was about fourth grade. And so there was still kind of that natural like naivete. And then this event happened to me where it's like, oh, I have to face the fact that there's something different happening to my body. This does actually happen with kids that undergo like medical issues younger in life, and there's something that happens to their body medically that they all of a sudden have to be aware of their body. But yeah, most kids aren't.
Yeah. Okay, so talk a little bit about, because clearly, you know, fourth grade, fifth grade, you're still, I mean, very much influenced by your family, by your parents and stuff. But at some point, you're probably saying to yourself, well, I'm feeling so odd or out of place, or I'm going to have to take matters into my own hands. I'm going to have to do something about this. What was that conversation you had in your own head? And what did you think you were going to do to normalize or to be whatever you thought you needed to be?
That's a really good question. That makes me think, for the listeners, if you know, you don't have to have an eating disorder, have had that thought you just said of like, I'm going to take matters into my own hands. A lot of us have that thought about one thing or the other. But when it comes to embodiment, you know, embodiment in our bodies, I think I started to develop that thought, I'm going to do something about this. It probably started in middle school. It did not get intense until maybe eighth grade and then ninth grade.
Okay.
And then intensifying more throughout high school.
Okay. And so that's when, so you're saying then by the time you hit high school, that's when you started struggling with eating disorders.
Yes. I don't know if I had a full-blown diagnosis back then. I'd really have to do a self-examination, but I definitely struggled with disordered eating. My thoughts were preoccupied with it a lot. I could still be, you know, friends with people and go play soccer and be taken away from those thoughts for a little bit. But it oftentimes came back to that at some point and started to amplify. I remember junior year, senior year. I do remember in sixth grade having the uncomfortable feeling like you described, but not knowing a solution.
Yeah.
So now that I've never been asked that question like that.
Yeah.
So I don't think I had that part in my head that's like, I'm going to take matters into my own hands. I just felt uncomfortable.
Yeah. 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 It's fascinating. And I think, you know, it's so interesting to me because I've talked to another friend and author here on the show who struggled. The way she talked about it was food fixation. So for her, it was specifically related to food, which obviously played into body image and whatnot. And I just remember her saying and thinking even in my own story when my mom struggled with this her whole life. And so I feel like I probably went on my first diet in sixth grade because my mom was on a diet and I decided, well, I better do it. Again, taking matters into your own hands. And I remember her and me kind of mirroring this thought of her saying, you know, it's this, the constant obsession with thinking about food. You're either thinking about food or you're thinking about not thinking about food or what it's doing to you or what effect it's going to have or whatever. And so it rules you. I mean, it starts to rule you and your behavior. And so, but let's talk a little bit. I want you to make a distinction here on how is a discussion on body image bigger than talking about eating disorders? Help us understand the broad umbrella of body image stuff, because like I was telling you beforehand, you know, we've got guys listening who maybe are like, oh yeah, I'll just eat anything. I don't care about this. What does this have to do with me? But the embodiment topic affects all of us, and there's always in our sin, in our brokenness, there are going to be different interpretations of what we struggle with.
Oh, absolutely. Body image, embodiment applies to everybody listening because we have a body. Now, some people are fortunate enough to not have really struggled with really even considering that the distorted thought that their body was bad. Mm-hmm. You know, I talked to a great clinician that I had today, and we were talking, consulting about a client with an eating disorder. And she was like, you know, I didn't really struggle with body image until recently when she was postpartum. And we were just talking about, what she said in that was, I notice it now, but I didn't really notice it as a problem before. Mm-hmm. And so for the listeners, one, everyone has a body. So we are all embodied. How connected we feel to that is another question. There's people out there that for some reason or another, male or female, have noticed their body from a younger age forward and have either probably decided it's good or it's bad. Mm-hmm. I think it's way more complex than that, but that's typically how we think when we're younger. Yeah. And then there might be some other listeners out there that, oh, I never even considered it would be bad. Mm-hmm. That's a wonderful experience. And then maybe later on in life or not, all of a sudden they realized it because of age or something that happened that made them bring awareness to their body in that way. So we all have a body. We all want to connect with it and start having an embodied experience in life. And so I work with a lot of my clients on that.
Yeah. Well, and it is true. And there are examples of, you know, again, we're talking about your specialty being eating disorders, but we were even talking beforehand about like whether or not it's, you know, the shape of a body part or hair loss or whatever. I mean, everyone's got something different that they're going to be prone to fixate on if they think that there's a wrongness about it.
Absolutely. Themselves. Like even when you were talking about your friend that said she fixated on food or you fixated on food, when I was thinking about that, it made me actually think, I fixated on my body before I fixated on food. Mm-hmm. And so I constantly would look at it. I would look at it in like, you know how you can see your body in like car reflections.
Yeah.
And so I would
store windows.
Oh yes, I'd be noticing it all the time. And then over time I also then became fixated with exercise or then food. Mm-hmm. So yeah, noticing that fixation. I think I got off though. What topic?
Yeah, one? No, that's good. No, and I think when you're talking about the influence others have on you, I even think of where, you know, whether this is a script within the church or a culture in general, is this. It's told to us that it's better just not even to think about your body. Like, that's just weird. I mean, people just come up, you know, they're like, no, we're spiritual people. Like, God love, you know, and they over-spiritualize stuff, you know.
Yes, so. There's some spiritual bypassing in there. And nowadays in psychology, we give a lot more emphasis to the body. Mm-hmm. You know, we have the book, The Body Keeps the Score, and mm-hmm. it's a really effective book by Dr. Besser van der Kolk about trauma. And then there's somatic experiencing theories that go all into how our body affects, you know, how we experience things. And so I think there's more acknowledgement in the field of psychology of our bodies are very important, how they store. So it's like, you know, we're just talking about this one aspect of body image, how we feel about our body. Mm-hmm. But then there's also an aspect of what's going on with your body as we grow and how are we connecting to it? So my goal really isn't to get people to not care about it. It's mm-hmm. to get them to care about it in a loving way mm-hmm. and notice how they are living life embodied.
Yeah.
And then even, you know, at some points for the people that have worked really hard on this embodiment aspect, being able to connect, having an embodiment experience also with Christ.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So tell us, what are some of the helpful messages then that we should be telling ourselves and others to help maybe process this? If we're someone who into young adulthood has just shut down that entire messaging or been like, well, that's not even something I'm going to think about. Or if I think about it, it's only bad. And as a result, it has led to an eating disorder. It has led to me feeling less than, feeling like God didn't make me right. Mm-hmm. How do we write that script?
Yeah, at first, before I would give a contradiction, right, like you don't like your body and therefore I'm telling you, yeah. you should start liking your body.
Right.
I would.
Or no, you're totally cute. You know, stop thinking that.
Yes, we think you're adorable. yeah, like with the five-year-olds, we're like, you're so cute. And we emphasize their look, not intentionally a lot yeah. of times, just because they are just beautiful creations of God. We forget that we also are. Mm-hmm. It's just so obvious mm-hmm. When we're looking at one, someone else, and two, children.
Yeah.
I would say I would love for the audience to look inwardly at themselves and that part and be curious, like, how old does that feel? That's a kind of a term we'll use in some certain psychologies of getting them to connect with, when did I start feeling this way? Mm-hmm. So when they think about their body image part or their bad body image part, mm-hmm. how old does that part feel? How young does that feel? When did that belief that, like, no, this is no good? So even just being curious about it. And then noticing, can we notice, for believers out there, the Holy Spirit, can we notice Him all, you know, His experience of us? And that, I'm getting further into some things that I might do in the office. Mm-hmm. But I'd say the first step is noticing it. And so being able to capture that thought, mm-hmm. as opposed to me just giving you another cognitive thought, I think most of the listeners have the balanced, contradicted thought. No, I shouldn't think that way. I should love myself now. Mm-hmm. And so actually, yes, we have thoughts that want to help us be better. We have thoughts that want to help us make some goal of ours. But when we have that experience of, I'm really not liking how I look, noticing it, capturing that thought and being curious about it. How old does this feel? When did this memory first come up? And start to look at that young part of us through hopefully the eyes of God at the time, the image bearer nature of who we are.
Yeah. I know you talk about this and I think the talking about children made me think of this again and mirroring this. There's a question that you say, and I'd love for you to put this in context, or a question you ask that we should be asking ourselves, and this idea of, do you feel free? You said that. What, talk about why that is a helpful question. I mean, the concept of freedom is such a big concept, but it is, for lack of a better term, it's a very freeing concept. It's an amazing concept. For me to think of a time, like if I were to ask myself, do I feel free? Or when was the last time I felt free? It's almost like an emotional question of that. But talk about that in the context of this. What should freedom feel like?
That's a great question. And I want to tell the listeners that that's what worked for me. That one of the things I noticed is how trapped I felt. Mm-hmm. And so I do think there's probably listeners that freedom feels scary. Why does it feel scary? I would be curious about. Mm-hmm. Also, in today's culture, freedom can, I think, sometimes be abused to be distorted, to look a certain way. Hey, you're free if you look like this or you mm-hmm. you do this. For me, I felt an inward trappedness. Like, I felt trapped in my body and my thoughts and my behaviors. I felt trapped in relationships and appeasing. And mm-hmm. and so I would say when it comes to body image, freedom is an aspect of that fixation mm-hmm. of, oh, my brain feels free of constantly looking at this or this having to be the most important thing about me or the, you know, something I consider 30 to 40% of the day, which doesn't sound like a high percentage, but it is when you consider, wow, that takes up a major portion of your thought space for mm-hmm. the day. Mm-hmm. And for some people, it's even higher, mm-hmm. right? So I think part of the freedom was just noticing how trapped I felt and then being curious about, I came to an internal acceptance of God wants more for me. He wants me to feel free in him. If I weren't to just use that as a spiritual bypassing component, it really had me kind of look inwardly of why did that not, young girl not feel free? Mm-hmm. And so I would go back to younger parts of like, what were lies that were told to me? Mm-hmm. What were incidents that no one really told to me? I just kind of took on as a kid and couldn't think outside of the way I was thinking. And mm-hmm. how can I correct some of that, even though it's in the past?
Yeah. Oh, that's great. You have a really a big truth that was revealed to you actually through a children's book that I know you love to share, a book by Matthew Turner titled When God Made You. Tell us, give us this quote or this the portion of the book that you thought was so meaningful to you, and then talk about how, because again, this is something else that we don't think of, like, oh, I need to turn to a truth in a children's book to understand something more
I love children's
essential
books.
About me. I mean, again, so this is where when we started adulting, we started leaving these things and forgetting their value. And so I would love for you to talk about, you know, well, first of all, tell us what it is. And then how did God particularly use that to help you understand your own struggle and how have you helped others with it?
Sure. So the sentence in When God Made You book was, when God sees you, God delights in what is and sees only what's true. Hmm. I think for me, it makes me sad because when I read it, and like people could just read that sentence and be like, oh, that's great and keep going. I think what struck me was like, he sees only what's true about me. So like all of these things that I dislike about myself, he doesn't even see those as accurate, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. And so it started making me interested as an adult. So I read this as an adult, not as a kid, of like, how does he see me? And not in like an over-spiritual way. Like I really read that sentence and was curious and wanted to know more about like, how does God actually see me, because I want that. Mm-hmm. I want to only see what's true about me. And there was something that I knew I'm not seeing everything accurately. Mm-hmm. You know, other people experience me differently. Mm-hmm. And yet I can't see myself the way they even see me. And they're humans and mm-hmm. they're still distorted in how they view me. So there was something about that line where I was like, oh, I really want that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so good. I mean, and as you're saying that, Becky, and I know you say that every time you read that, you get emotional. So, yeah. Hey, you know, time number 742. Yes. There you go. Me too. I even started tearing up. What I think is so crazy about that is think of how collectively the months, the years, the decades we have lost obsessing about stuff that ultimately is not even true. Stuff that God has not said about us, stuff that, you know, and again, you also have said this before, kind of the script that people give, you know, when it comes to weight. If I only lost 5 to 10 pounds, I would sure feel better about myself. How do you know? I mean, that's
all right. And like historically, I mean, the research shows almost every single eating disorder client,
yeah.
that's what they think. And then it's yeah. not accurate.
We always have this elusive end goal that's somewhere out there that we're never going to reach, because then when we hit the 5, well, that's not enough. You know, clearly that wasn't the solution.
What it's really saying, it's a shame voice. It doesn't sound like shame because it's you're not saying I'm shameful, right?
Right.
Or you're bad.
Yeah.
But what it's really saying is I'm not enough.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not good enough.
Mm-hmm.
if I lose 5 pounds, I will be better enough.
Yeah, right. Right. Hmm. And we know that that's not going to be true. So give us, just so we do understand, because I do want to circle back specifically to the eating disorder component of this. What is, I mean, there are people out there who mindfully eat, who are like, yeah, I'm not, you know, before we started taping, we were talking about gummy bears. They are going to be like, maybe they won't open a 2-pound bag of gummy bears and eat all of them because they are mindful and they are healthy in their approach to what is good for their bodies versus unhealthy scripts of, you know, to help identify this could be treading towards behavior that is disordered or thinking that's disordered. What would be a couple clues for someone to understand?
Well, the more rigid we're getting, and in psychology, we talk in diagnosing world, we talk about like intensity, duration, and the other one will come to me. Mm-hmm. But one thing is like the more rigid your thoughts are becoming, mm-hmm. right? At first you're like, hey, if I eat that whole bag of gummy bears, my tummy might hurt. But you haven't labeled the gummy bears as bad. Mm-hmm. So you're not like, oh, these are bad and these mean bad things for me. They're just gummy bears. They don't actually have a soul.
Yeah.
You know, they're right. cute and they look like bears. But you've decided, oh, I don't want my stomach to hurt. And then there's think when your thoughts become more rigid, I can never have these. These mm-hmm. are bad for me. Mm-hmm. These, it's like, be connected to your body and know, like, if I have this, this is how it makes my body feel. Mm-hmm. But then whenever we're starting to get more rigid, whenever your thoughts are getting more intense or, like, I like how you said, fixated. Mm-hmm. Like, when it's becoming more fixated, like, just use the word percent. Like, it's taking over more of a percentage of my brain space. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, this used to be another thought is duration. How long has this been lasting? This used to happen. You know, I just struggled with this every once in a while. And now you're noticing like once a week, you know, it's really hard for you. And now not just once a week, most days it's hard for you. And now not just most days, but like throughout the whole day, mm-hmm. you know, or throughout segments of the day. So you're just noticing the frequency, intensity, frequency, and duration. You're noticing the frequency is mm-hmm. amping up mm-hmm. and then duration of how long is this going?
Yeah.
No, so those are things to look for.
Yeah, that's good. And then just, I mean, I guess just as we finish out here, I do want to remind people, and we're going to actually list, you know, Becky has a number of resources that she thinks are helpful, and we're going to make those available in the show notes. So we will have those for you, so don't feel like you have to scribble a bunch of things down. But this is such a great start to the conversation, and I'm hoping that in the future we'll be able to continue it, Becky. But thank you for just shedding some light on really even getting us, like you said, the word curious, being curious, being able to start having that conversation with ourselves on this topic, I think is so helpful. So we really appreciate it.
Yes, thanks for having me. I hope that it's been helpful to the listeners and a little more connecting to their body.
Awesome. Well, that is it, folks. I do want to make you aware of a book, actually, we have here at Focus that we want to give to you for a gift of any amount to Boundless. So we often do this on the show where we have a resource and you just give a gift or whatever you can afford, and we will send a copy of this book to you. This week, the book is titled Table for Two, Biblical Counsel for Eating Disorders. And you basically go to boundless.org. You can search for 841. And you will be able to see the book cover there. You just click on the book cover. You give a gift to Boundless. We will send this book to you as our thank you to you. And again, like I said, we'll have these other resources linked. I also want you to be aware of our counseling department here at Focus on the Family that's available for a complimentary consultation. If this is something where you feel like I'm totally treading into this headspace, this is something that maybe I've wondered about, and I really feel like maybe having a listening ear and getting some guidance here would be helpful. Go to boundless.org/counseling for more information, including a number to call for a consult on this, and even referrals to Christian counselors, licensed professional Christian counselors in your area as well. So, go ahead and avail yourself of that, and I think you'll really be glad that you did.
Jesus loves me, this I know, for the Bible tells me, for the Bible tells me so. I wanna go back to this little life, gonna let it shine, gonna let it shine. Listen.
All right, folks, we are opening up our inbox for something unique this week because we got a, I'm just going to put it out there. This is a weird question. This is very like subjective but quite frankly, we're going to have fun with it. And we have the entire team here. I have Bree, John, and Alex with me. Hey, you guys.
What's up? Hey.
Woo, woo. Because someone wants to know what our favorite foods are. And they said, and why, but I already told you guys, we don't have like 20 minutes to talk about this. So y'all better be quick if you're going to get into this. So who wants to start? We're talking about our favorite foods and maybe why, if you can say it quickly.
The easy answer for me, spaghetti. That's with marinara sauce, actually. That's specific qualifier.
Meat or no?
Yes. Okay. I'll take it with the ground beef. I'll take it with meatballs. That's just an easy answer.
That is a legit comfort food.
It's so good. It's so good. I'll also say honorable mention, Jersey Mike's had a sandwich that they discontinued, the pastrami Reuben. Add a little chipotle mayo to that. That is so good. So it would be that. Panda Express orange chicken.
Wonderful
choice. So good. Yeah. Also, a couple more seconds here. Thai hot and sour soup, green curry. So good. And give me a waffle at any Holiday Inn and I'll be pleased.
Okay, just one follow-up question for you.
Any complimentary breakfast waffle is so good.
One follow-up question, because, you know, I'm so inquisitive. On the spaghetti, traditional noodle or a different kind of noodle?
I'm open to any type of noodle, but spaghetti, it's just the classic for me.
You like to twirl. Oh, yep.
There's a big discussion in my family about spaghetti and whether or not it actually has to use spaghetti noodles or whether you can still consider it spaghetti if it's like penne or something. But that's way too long for this conversation.
That is, and I would recommend maybe finding other things to talk about.
Or a counselor.
Like Lord. Yeah, or a counselor. All right. Okay, Bree, how about you?
When we first got this question, I went into this with a lot of trepidation because I am the worst person when it comes to favorites, as in I don't have any favorites because I have many favorites. Like if you were to give me a restaurant, I could tell you what I order and that would probably be the easiest, but we don't have the time for that. So I like food. And the one thing that I was going to talk about here was something that I've been making recently, which I got first on a food truck, and they named all of their foods just after, I don't know, elements of the show The Office. And so this particular dish is called Threat Level Midnight. And it's tater tots with barbecue pulled pork, sour cream, green onions, and cheese. It is so good. It's like a baked potato, but like way more fun. And it's delicious. Good. So highly recommend. That's easy great. Make. Easy make.
That sounds really good. Okay, John.
Mine was tough to narrow down because literally the only food I don't like is eggplant. If you do like eggplant, God bless you. I can't do it. I've tried.
Texture.
But the texture of it. But a couple that definitely stand out are brisket. I'm a huge barbecue fan. I'll give a restaurant recommendation. If you're in the upstate of South Carolina, go to the Smokin' Pig. It is worth the wait. The brisket is amazing. I'm so, so thankful for it. And then I would also say another one. Yeah. Oh, okay. When you try it, yes. There's a reason why
he's
going to
have a prayer meeting after we're done here. Okay.
Without question.
Praise the Lord for brisket.
And the second one I will say is I am a huge fan of steak. Ribeye, prime rib, filet mignon. I love it all. As long as it's cooked well, I'm a huge fan of that. When I say cooked well, I mean quality. I actually like it medium, not necessarily well done. But my brother actually works at a restaurant called Sullivan's Metropolitan Grill. And if you're in our hometown of Anderson, South Carolina, definitely go there, order the steak. It is one of the few meals that I have had that I literally could not talk because I was enjoying it that much.
Do you eat vegetables, John? You listen to meats.
I do enjoy vegetables. I'm a big carrot fan.
Me and you, John.
He's a big carrot fan.
Like Bugs Bunny.
Okay.
Lisa, what do you think about him saying steak? Jeez.
Not a huge fan of steak. We were having that conversation before.
That's okay.
I will say that, you know, if you only listen to John, you think there's only good food in South Carolina. So, but if you're in South Carolina, John has you covered.
Yeah,
so that's
right.
Good.
Yeah, just hit us up in DMs.
Okay.
I'll send you recommendations.
That's perfect. I'm going to give just a super quick hodgepodge because, again, I had a hard time narrowing it down as well. Historically growing up, pasta was it. So I really am vibing with you, Alex, on that big time comfort food. It's so easy to make and just whatever, and it's a winner. So not afraid of that. I will say, when asked nowadays, I often will say chicken tikka masala. There is almost no Indian dish that I do not like. Indian's probably one of my cuisines of choice, so big fan there. Lately, though, I'm going to talk about bowls and just bowls of any kind that go any, I mean, pickle something and put it in a bowl with meat, quinoa, random hummus, a cream of sorts, a tzatziki sauce. I will mix anything in a bowl together, and it is so healthy and so amazing. I can't even start on how amazing it is. And then I'm going to finish by giving my single food item of choice, and that is the olive. I am a self-proclaimed expert on olives. If you want to write to me and ask for olive recommendations, I will give them to you. There are many varieties. I'm a big fan. And so I just want you to know that if you want to know more about olives, I'm your girl.
I've never wanted that. So
wow, that was like super rude.
Sorry. I don't like olives.
Okay, can't even stand this conversation anymore. And those of you who are just like, I love olives, those canned black olives.
Live your best life.
Yeah, whatever.
Okay, I like olive oil.
You can have all the olives. I like olive oil too.
That's awesome. Okay. Good thoughts, you guys. I hope, listener, that you got your answers. We had fun doing this. So super great contributions for that. All right, folks, that is it for this week's show. Do find us, whether you find us at boundless.org, whether you find us over on YouTube at our channel, boundless.org, where you can now start listening to our articles. All of you people that love audio, make sure you're getting our written content, even in audio form, over there. In the meantime, we will see you around next week. I'm Lisa Anderson for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of boundless.org from Focus on the Family.
It can be challenging to inspire your community to see life the way God sees it. So what's the solution? Well, on June 15th, Focus on the Family is hosting Sea Life 24. And no matter where you are or who you are, you can be a part of this free event with speakers like Ben and Kirsten Watson and real stories about choosing life. Sea Life 24 will inspire you to translate your faith into action. Register today at sealife24.org.